Call the meeting to order. It is quarter after, so I like to start on time and end on time. We are having a joint hearing today because of, as you can see on the agenda, we have the commissioner and members from the MDA and the Department of, or Board of Animal Health. Before we get started, is Representative Clark. Representative Clark, are we ready? All right. So members, as we pointed out at the last meeting, we like to recognize special people in agriculture, if you will. And today, Representative Clark has individuals that within the district that she serves. So, Representative Clark, if you'd like to take it away.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, these folks are within all of our districts because who we're recognizing today is the Council on Black Minnesotans for their promotion of urban agriculture. So we do have the resolution, Mr. Chairman, which your staff and I work together on, and I want to just read it. Some of those folks who we're referring to, maybe you can stand up when we're done and just wave or let people know that you're here. So this says, a House resolution recognizing the Council on Black Minnesotans for promoting urban agriculture. Whereas the Council on Black Minnesotans was established in 1980 to ensure and enhance the participation of people of African heritage across the social, political, and economic spheres of life in Minnesota. And whereas across the nation, communities with significant African American populations are disproportionately affected by a lack of access to locally produced fresh food, with citizens of lower economic means and those reliant on public transportation at a particular disadvantage. And whereas these areas, known as food deserts, have been linked by studies to health problems such as obesity and diabetes, and whereas the practice of urban agriculture produces fresh, nutritious food from within urban communities and enhances food security for those who live there, and whereas, in addition to fostering food availability, urban agriculture promotes employment, entrepreneurship, and physical activity, and whereas the Council on Black Minnesotans, under the leadership of Executive Director Ed McDonald and Board Chair Patwin Lawrence, is encouraging the Minnesota Legislature to allow greater access by urban areas to agricultural funding, including current programs and grants, and to require cities with populations over 60,000 to include urban agriculture and aquaculture development zones in land use planning. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration of the House of Representatives of the State of Minnesota, that it commends the Council on Black Minnesotans for promoting urban agriculture in Minnesota and acknowledges the Council for its dedication to meaningful agricultural growth and change. And this is dated yesterday, January 14, 2015, and signed by Kurt Dowd, our Speaker, Minnesota House of Representatives, Joyce Pepin, Chair of the Rules and Legislative Administration, Rod Hamilton, State Representative and Chair of this committee, and Karen Clark, State Representative. So, Mr. Chairman, if we could just ask maybe members of the Council and others involved in urban agriculture who are here, please just stand up and be acknowledged.
That'd be fantastic. Please stand up and be recognized.
Both sides.
There's more behind you over here too. I saw my friend. So I see some friendly faces as well, Representative Clark from last year.
Yes.
And so that's one thing. Representative Clark and I were talking, and it was the word escapes me. I guess I was surprised at and a little bit I guess why didn't I think of that before type of thing, and it was my response, and this is an education piece on all sides of the issue. You know, Representative Clark has done a wonderful job helping me, being out in rural Minnesota, about agriculture as it pertains to the cities, you know, the urban area as well. And so when you came in and others came in and testified last year, it was fantastic. It was fun. You remember that, do you not?
I sure do. And Mr. Chairman, I'm looking forward to having a hearing on those bills this year too, right?
And Representative Clark, we do have a bill number, right, Mr. Bratz?
We have two bill numbers, I believe, yeah.
Yes, we do. Oh, excuse me. Bill number 179. And the second one, I'm not sure. I haven't found it yet.
is 179?
179.
So, 179. Yeah, 179, and that was the bill, Representative Clark, that you and I, you're the chief author on. I'm a co-author, and friends, what that does is it allows the dollars that are available, some grant money from the Department of Agriculture. Basically, it offers clarifying language to where it can be used, all across the state and in metro areas as well. Correct, Representative Clark?
That's exactly right. I mean, that is allowed right now, but this makes it very clear that those loan and grant programs would be available to urban farmers as well, should they be able to qualify and so on. So, and then the other bill provides for our urban agriculture zones in cities over 60,000. And so we'll be having a hearing on that. I'm not quite sure. But there's room on that, on both of those bills, for many more signatures, people. So we just Representative Doubt and I just started. So thank you.
All right. Very good. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, is there going to be opportunities for us to come out and see some examples of these urban farms?
Representative Clark.
That's what a wonderful question, of course. I think we should arrange that, and maybe if the chairman would help us, we could put together a bus tour maybe at some point, probably when the weather gets a little bit warmer, and then we start seeing some germination and so on. But I think that would be great.
Representative Miller, that's a great idea. You have a follow-up?
No.
Any questions or comments, members? So, once again, thank you so much for our guests for being here today. And Mr. Bratz, you'll be mailing that out. Is that correct? That
yes,
resolution.
Yes, I will.
And Representative
yep.
Clark.
And I apologize for that. As an oversight on my end, just Ms. Representative Clark's signature. So we'll get that out to you as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. All right. So thank you. All right, members, we'll move along on our agenda.
Mr. Chairman.
Once again, thank you so much, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. I'd like to, Mr. Cruz, would you like to come forward and please introduce yourself for the record, and and you can begin.
Thank you, Chair Hamilton. Santo Cruz for the Department of Agriculture here in Minnesota. First of all, I'd like to thank the Chair for the invitation to come and do a broad overview of both of the agencies I represent. That would be the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. Both of those agencies will be giving a broad overview today. I'd also thank the chair for the invitation for our division directors to come in next Tuesday to give more of an in-depth look into the programs that MDA serves. Before I turn it over to the commissioner and to our CFO, I just want to do a brief introduction of myself for the committee. I am Santo Cruz. I am an attorney. I have a very common background to many of you all that, as I heard your introductions for the new members and some of the previously serving members, I grew up on a dairy farm as well and did not go into the family business. I went to St. Thomas and then graduated law school. I was a prosecutor for violent felonies in Minneapolis for several years. I went to become an attorney for the Department of Commerce, and then obviously now am the Director of Legislative Affairs for both the Board of Animal Health and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I love my work. I love the work I get to do. And I will say, I think there's palpable nostalgia around the farming operations that were talked about in the first hearings when people introduced themselves about coming off of the farm. I feel that. I feel that passion today. I think these are important issues. And these are salt-of-the-earth people and salt-of-the-earth issues. And I'm excited to get into them this session. So with that, thank you.
Oh, thank you. So any questions for Mr. Cruz at this moment? Otherwise, you do have some guests, right?
That's correct.
So would you like to make the introductions? Or
absolutely. We have Commissioner Dave Fredrickson of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and Steve Ernest, our CFO. Thank you.
And thank you so much for all that you do. I appreciate it. Mr. Cruz, you really I really enjoy working with you as well. So fantastic. Commissioner.
I don't enjoy working with him.
Don't you? So, and if I can just, if I can ad lib here a little bit, if you do not know Commissioner Fredrickson, get to know him. He is fantastic. He has done a world of good for the world of agriculture, and he's a lot of fun as well. So, Commissioner, yeah. Well, I'm asking for a big budget, so I'm trying to butter you up here. Yeah.
All right. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today and for the warm welcome. I was told also, I totally enjoyed Representative Clark bringing folks in today. We've had the opportunity to work with many folks at the department in our new farmer program that the legislature funded a few years back, and it's been working. We've worked with a variety of folks to assist them in building up their small operations, even simple things like a garden tiller that they weren't able to afford. And so, and then, of course, I always take away more than I leave, just learning of the customs and learning about the culture has been an incredible gift. And so I appreciate you doing, I recall you did it a few years ago. You'd have somebody talk about their district, I believe, and point out when you were chair in the past. So I encourage you to keep on with that effort. I was told to give a brief overview of my life. Much of it is X-rated, so that's why I have a prosecuting attorney back here to keep me out of trouble.
Commissioner, that's the part we want to hear about.
Yeah, I'll bet, right. In other words, I'm reminded of the running mate of Ross Perot when he stepped up to the podium and said, "Who am I and what am I doing here?" And so let me just start with that a little bit. I grew up on a little farm out in Representative Miller's district, just up the road a piece from a little town called Murdoch, the middle child of three middle kids here. It's a tough row. Yeah, I had an older sister and a younger brother. I graduated from high school, went to the service, came home, went to college, and became a teacher of learning disabled and behavior problem youngsters. I see a few of my students in class here. I just won't point you out. I know they're here. I'm glad to see that you've become something, made something of your life. My father's health failed, and my sister is an English teacher at the time, and my brother, Paul, is a veterinarian in Anchorage, Alaska. Don't ask me why, but nonetheless, he is. And my father's health was failing, and somebody had to go home to the farm. And I'm married to my high school classmate and sweetheart, Catherine Ann Kennedy. I'm a Norwegian Lutheran. She's an Irish Catholic. And in 1965, they call that a mixed marriage. And so we actually dislike one another intently, but we're going to prove them wrong because they said it would never last. And so we've been married now 49 years, coming up on 50. We spent 24 and a half years on the farm in Murdoch. I left the teaching business and became involved in a variety of political and not so political issues. I spent some time on our local school board and helped them go through a consolidation. And I learned early on, and I imagine that many of you, particularly those that are recently elected, don't go in the liquor store in town after 10 o'clock at night, because everything is your fault. Everything. Or the bar, or even the restaurant, as far as that goes. I learned that early on and stayed out of there. During those 24 and a half years, I ran and was accidentally elected to the Minnesota Senate in 1986. When the dust and the smoke settled on the night of the election, I had won the seat by 32 votes. And my friend Don Wick, who now writes does radio work for Red River Farm Network, called me up in the morning and said, "You've won the election." I didn't think I would, so I just went to bed that night and woke up in the morning to understand that I had to go to St. Paul and serve. And I recognized early on that every now and then, Representative Dill, every now and then a innocent person is sent to serve in the legislature. And I retired then after two terms, a long and a short, in the Senate, and went literally back home to the farm, doing both. I was approached to fill up an unexpired term of the president of Minnesota Farmers Union, a former member of the legislature whose son now serves, Kent Eakin, Senator Eakin. His father, Willis, was at that time the president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. Willis was the majority leader in the House several years back, and was leaving to go back home to the farm. And I was asked to come over and fill an unexpired term. And I thought, on the way back to the farm, yeah, I could do that. I could do that for a few months, and that turned into 10.5 years, at which time I continued to juggle the farm and the work. Eventually, I rented the farm. My wife and I rented the farm out and then sold it to a cousin. I went on to serve then as president of the National Farmers Union. I spent two terms living out of a suitcase, literally, and an apartment in Denver, where our national office was located, and D.C., and then various points between D.C. And Denver. I was traveling to a meeting in Mexico City as the president of the national organization, which is based in Denver and D.C., and coming back from Mexico City to the Twin Cities, I'm flying along, I suppose, at 25,000 feet, and the airplane was struck by lightning, and this monstrous ball of fire went out from under the plane. And I'm thinking, boy, I should, you know, should take a lesson from this, maybe get out of this business or something, and because I was flying a lot, living out of a suitcase in Denver and D.C. and here. But hung in there. About a few months later, I was traveling to this little town out in western Minnesota called Woodstock, not the one Representative has remembered, but one out in western Minnesota. Actually, say, if you remember Woodstock, you weren't there. So the little town was Woodstock, and I was headed for that. And I fell asleep at the wheel out around Cosmos. A beautiful morning, crisp fall morning. I cranked the radio up. I was heading on out to meet with a guy on wind energy. You remember him, Representative Hamilton, Dan Jewell. And I fell asleep and ran into the back of a grain truck. I was doing about 65. Oh, no, it was on Highway 7. I was doing 55. And the grain truck was doing about half of that. And I rear-ended the truck, ended up in the Litchfield Hospital, and came out of that pretty well. And I realized at that time that I must have had a sign, and I decided to get out of the business, and I retired at 63 years of age. I then sat around the house for a while, and finally my wife said to me, "You remember those vows we took in 1965? I said, "I do." "Do you remember the one about in sickness and in health?" "I do." "I'm okay with that," she said. "Do you remember the one about until death do us part?" "I do remember that. I'm okay with that too. However, I am not okay with you being home for lunch, so go find something to do." And so out the door I went. Senator Klobuchar was just elected. I went to work for Amy, and I spent the first 4 years of her first term with her doing policy work both here in Minnesota and D.C., and also constituent work for her. For 4 years, the governor was elected 4 years ago and asked if I would come over to work at the Department of Agriculture. And I thought, why not? This would be a great opportunity, and I did. I have survived the past 4 years, and the governor foolishly asked me to come back again for the next 4 years. So now you have my entire life story. You don't, you can quote me on it if you wish. And that's why I find myself here today. I'm incredibly honored to be here. I am honored that the governor chose to ask me to come back for another go-around. So with that, let me just, now you should have a pretty good sense of who I am and where I come from. A little town out in western Minnesota, a little town called Murdoch, which I love dearly, and will always call my home. Let me just open up by talking about the mission of the Department of Agriculture. And it's a mission that I look at on a daily basis and have a good understanding of it. I think it's well stated. Our mission is to enhance Minnesota's quality of life by ensuring the integrity of our food supply, the health of our environment, and the strength of our rural economy. Those three pillars is what the department builds its strength on. I appreciate immensely the work that has gone on before me, and I know my predecessor, Gene Hugeson, is sitting here in the crowd today, and I compliment Gene for the work that he did during his long tenure as Commissioner of Agriculture here in Minnesota. Tough shoes to follow in my case. Gene and I were elected to the Senate together in 1986. Gene came into the House and I came into the Senate, and we have been long-term and long-time friends over those years, and continue to work with one another on a variety of issues that affect agriculture here in Minnesota. So I just wanted to acknowledge your former member and colleague here in the House, and my good friend, Gene Hugeson.
Yes. Thank you for doing that, Commissioner.
We have four primary divisions within the department. Four primary, but let me talk about our general area. We have the Commissioner's Office. We have Ag Marketing and Development, the Ag Marketing Development Division. We have the Dairy and Food Inspection Division, Finance and Budget. Steve is here today to talk about that. We have our Human Resources Division. We have our Lab Services Division that we share with the Department of Health. We also co-locate with the Department of Health at the Orville L. Freeman Building, just as we say in Murdoch, just up the road a piece, so, or in this case, down the hill a piece. We also have Minute Services within our building. We have the Fertilizer and Pesticide Management Division and our Plant Protection Division. I'll just mention those four primary divisions: our Ag Marketing and Promotion Division, our Dairy and Food Inspection Division, our Pest and Fertilizer Management Division, and our Plant Protection Division. Overall, the department has roughly 435 full-time equivalents. 300 of them work out of the office here in St. Paul, just down the hill. About 130 in the food, feed and meat division work outside of the office here in St. Paul. Steve is along today to talk about our mission and our budget, and I will be happy to stand for any questions when Steve gets through with this presentation, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions or comments for the Commissioner at this time?
I just want to say thank you so much for all that you do as well. It's truly a joy working with you. Also, thank you for recognizing Commissioner Hugeson up there. I saw him smile and wave early, so thank you as well for being here and all that you have done for the state of Minnesota and agriculture as well.
He also has a group of folks with today that have been, I guess I'm reluctant to call them students, I guess, Gene, but they're also here with Mr. Hugeson.
Well, welcome, everybody. Appreciate it. So, any questions for the Commissioner at this time? Seeing none. You must have covered everything. So, yeah. Mr. Ernst.
Mr. Chair, my name is Steve Ernst. I'm the CFO, Finance and Budget Director for the agency. I've been at agriculture for 10 years now. It's a great agency to work at. As you'll see on our slides, it's not one of the bigger budgets, but I think we get a great bang for the buck out of what we do have, the money we work with. This slide shows the mission statement that the Commissioner mentioned and kind of aligns that a little bit by colors, even though it's not that simple, with the way we break down our agency of the protection side, the promotion side, and then administration. The protection side includes the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division, Plant Protection Division, the Dairy and Food Inspection Division, and the Lab Division. So it's obviously a big bulk of our work. The promotion area includes our Marketing and Development Division and our Agri Program. And then administration includes the Commissioner's Office, HR, IT, Finance, and Budget, those types of things. Some of the assistance programs we have also that are in the Marketing and Development Division. This slide shows the sources for our budget. So about 35% comes from the general fund, and I'll give you a better breakdown of what that goes to on the next slide. 46% is from our fee payers, and most of that is in our agricultural fund, which is statutorily appropriated. It doesn't usually appear in the bill that you work on, but I provided you the key references so you can see where how that breaks down too in here. We have about 10% from the federal government for food and meat and some of the bigger promotion programs are big things. And then we have our clean water legacy money, about 9%. That money goes through an additional process with the other environmental type agencies that use clean water money, so we coordinate with them and you coordinate with another committee, I think, on that too. So that's not just in this committee. The third slide here provides a real high level view of our general fund. So you can see I kind of have it separated by the areas of protection, the marketing, and then the agency services. And then I wanted to show also how some of that is passed through. So we don't do all of our work at the agency. We work with a lot of partners out there that are the experts and can take the money and do more with it than we can with our staff. You can see our agri program there is $20 million. And again, those are biennial numbers, so it's about $10 million a year for that one. Grants for education and assistance, we have money that flows through Second Harvest Heartland for milk grants and surplus food grants. We have help to, like, the Livestock Breeders Association, the county fairs, several different organizations that work with youth to educate and help them out. And then the final slide here just breaks down the agricultural fund, the accounts in that fund, and I have lines separating the divisions within our agency that work with each fund. So Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division on top, and then the Plant Protection Division, and then the Dairy and Food Division, Laboratory Division, and the Marketing and Development Division. You can see approximately what the biennial numbers are in each of those accounts and the statute where that account is created. So generally the money is used for implementation of that chapter, sometimes that chapter and other chapters also. And you can see that pesticide is the largest of those accounts. And that is all I have for the overview. That's a very high level overview. You'll get a lot more detail from the division directors when they talk about their budgets.
Right. We do have a question. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you go back the slide there on the Wolf account, and is there still are there still funds in that account, or has that been exhausted?
Ernest.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I believe we have exhausted all that money, and we did get some assistance from some federal money, I believe, also, and have exhausted that, too. I don't have the updated numbers with me.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, we did send out notices that the fund has been exhausted, and so, again, we are doing our best to address that. There are federal funds that are available. And so we're referring those that have a claim to that end, and we'll also be looking at that as we go into the budget cycle, planning cycle.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, there's been some discussion about a deficiency bill on a variety of funds. Does the department have a request for that fund for the deficiency to meet any needs that occur between now and June 30th?
To my knowledge, no, we do not.
Representative Hansen.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. and either the commissioner or Mr. Ernst. So looking at the overall funds, I'm not clear on the increase of funding. It seems that last year we had like a 6% increase, or what was the base funding increase over the prior biennium?
Commissioner? Mr. Ernest?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't have those numbers.
Mr. Ernest, but we're going to be getting into that even deeper, correct, Mr. Ernest or Commissioner?
To my knowledge, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, I don't think it was an increase. I think it was a decrease, but we found additional monies. We decreased the amount to be made available by 100. We were able to come back with additional monies through the work of Gary Friso, the director of the division, and so we made up all of that with the exception of 20,000. And so we are cognizant of that, and basically the law was if you can shoot, and so prior to the change in the court decision as we are dealing with now, and so we are trying to focus our attention on that, but the governor's budget is not yet released, and of course I will defer to him for the details, and we're trying to address that.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's my error in probably not being clear. My last question was an overall question rather than on that particular line item.
Oh, okay.
On the overall general fund budget, there was an increase in one estimation.
Commissioner? Mr. Ernst?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is how I took your question. I don't recall the exact number. It's not a large change either way between the biennium. I don't believe.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I think it was about a 6% increase over time from the prior budget. But we can dive into that in the next session.
Good. All right. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at the line item on your laboratory services account, and those of us that have toured that lab over at the Department of Ag building, it's a world-class, state-of-the-art facility. And I think part of that also deals with the Department of Health, but is the entire funding for that lab taken out of your budget or partially with the Department of Health as well?
It's a shared budget.
Okay. Thank you.
And
Chair.
It is, and we would invite both the committee chairs to bring the committee over to take a look at the lab. It is a world-class laboratory, and I think it's something to be very, very proud of.
And Commissioner, Mr. Nisley just said it's in the works, so good. He's working on that. He's way ahead of us. So, Chair Anderson, follow-up? No? We have Representative Johnson, Grunhagen, and Lewick. So, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Commissioner, I don't know if this is the right time to ask about this, but I read about in the newspaper that there was a significant federal grant, I believe, coming to the Ag Department. And if you could just give us a brief overview of that or tell us what that is.
Commissioner.
I can. 2.5-3 years ago, Mr. Chairman and Representative Johnson, 2.5 years ago, we sat down with the NRCS discussed the possibility of looking at a certainty program for farmers. The certainty program is basically a response to farmers' concern that every time the legislature or the department, either makes a rule change or a law change, they referred to it as moving the goalpost. And so we meet the obligation that we're required to meet, and then what do? You turn around and you change the rules on us. And so what we want is some kind of certainty. And so I felt that that's important. We should be able to look hard into that. Connected up with NRCS. They were looking at some possibility of increasing conservation practices on the land. We were looking at some possibilities from a voluntary perspective of doing much the same, but adding the clause certainty. Now, there are those that will say you can't, from a department perspective, you can't offer certainty because that's up to the legislature. I understand that, but we can come as close as we can, and being a former member, I recognize that at most of the time we tend to shy away from contracts. If there's a contract between one individual and the other, from a legislative perspective, at least while I was around here, we always tried to honor that. And so that's the best we can do. We offer a contract that says you have certainty for the next 10 years. We have established a tool that we overlay on the farm operation. It is a voluntary effort. They will come in and work with our planner in the four targeted watersheds that we have today. We will establish a numerical reference to their farm, and if they come over 8.5 on a 0 to 10 scale, we can work with them to establish the fact that they are participating in the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. And so we have that. And the legislature granted that 2 years ago, I believe. We've built out the program. We have today about 10,000 acres signed into the program from all across the four watershed districts. Our approach then was to apply for, and the good news is we did receive a RCPP grant this past, it was announced yesterday, and to the tune of $9 million that will come to the department over the next 5 years to enhance and build out that Ag Water Quality Certification Program. And I think it's an important enough program with partnerships with USDA, NRCS, also a partnership with EPA. And the partnership there was they came to town and said, water management is your responsibility, and we'll sign on the bottom line. We don't want anything to do with it. That's good news. And so we are working hand-in-hand with NRCS and the departments. It's a collaboration with Minnesota DNR and also MPCA and the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We are the lead agency, and we worked collaboratively to put the grant in, and we were fortunate to be one of three recipients in the Minnesota area, which literally spills a little bit over into North Dakota, but we're moving forward with it. Of course, we have an ask in. We have a requirement that we have to come up with $5 million of matching money to match the $9 million, and I think that ask is in through the legacy process. So it's a great program. It's moving forward. We have, as I said, we have 10,000 acres included at this time. We have something over 235 farms that are in the queue looking to have that certification. At the end of the day, they put a nice sign out at the end of the driveway. One of our participants indicated that, you know, if you go to the dentist, they have a sign on the wall saying, I'm a certified dentist. If you go to the counselors, they say, I'm a certified counselor. If you go to a farmer, there's nothing out there that said, I'm a certified farmer. And this, he said, is really important. It acknowledges the good conservation work that I've done, the fellow, over the last, over my lifetime. I have this sign at the end of the driveway. And I'm really pleased to hear that. I think it's an important program from a policy and a finance perspective that I would certainly encourage Chair Hamilton and Chair Anderson to consider having an opportunity for the committees to understand more about the program that we have going.
And thank you, Commissioner. And that's leaned over to Chair Anderson. He said that he was planning on that as well. So. Yeah, and congratulations on that announcement yesterday, too. That's fantastic.
Well, anytime you can get $9 million of federal dollars, I think that's a win for us out here, particularly to do the type of work that we're doing. I think, you know, if from my perspective, and that is from, you know, a policy a person and an advocate and a farmer, if you can establish best management practices on all working lands, wouldn't we have a better state? And I think we would. And again, this is a voluntary approach. If people want to do it, they're welcome to it. We'll assist them in analyzing their operation, and we will ensure through additional practices that they can meet that standard and put that sign at the end of the driveway. So I'm really proud of the work we've done at this point.
Very well. Representative Johnson, do you have a follow-up on that?
No.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thanks for the softball, Representative Johnson.
Yeah, and you've kind of touched on this a little bit already, Commissioner, is in my area, a lot of the farmers and organizations like Farm Bureau are pretty concerned about this federal EPA regulation on water in terms of water rights and private property. I've done a little bit of study on it, but it seems to be an overreach in many cases. Are you concerned about it, and do you think we should try and do anything about it in terms of federal government coming down to micromanage what happens on our farms in the state of Minnesota?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruenhagen, of course, the whole issue of waters of the U.S. has pretty well come to an end. I was extremely pleased that that got put to bed. And so I don't see it popping up again. And my position was that we not go down that road. And so you have a friend in that regard.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Yeah, just another follow-up question. When you talk about certification of farms, you know, I was raised on a dairy farm, hogs, chickens, sheep, pigs, and a few rabbits, too. But, you know, the history of government being involved with farming is not completely stellar. And, you know, just one of the red flags that came up for me is, you know, in the 60s, the government was paying farmers not to plant crops on land. You probably remember that. And yet at the same time, during the same period of time, they were turning around and paying farmers, I think, up to 70% of the cost to drain swamps. So on the one hand, they were promoting the draining of land and more planting, and on the other hand, they were paying farmers not to plant. I don't know what kind of drugs they were on, but the point is, you know, the problem with government is, you know, once they get their fingers on something, the next thing you know, they're in much further micromanaging what a business person can and will or possibly even do, and I guess that raises a red flag for me. So why don't you tell me something that will calm some of those fears, okay?
So, Commissioner, what kind of drugs are you on? I think that was the question. Commissioner, please, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gruenhagen, I did have a couple of cups of coffee this morning. That's about it for the day, but the day is not over. My response, Mr. Chairman and Representative, is this is a voluntary program. If folks would like to participate, they may. And they get something out of it. They get certainty for the next 10 years that the goalpost will not move. And again, it's a voluntary program, and I think it's a good program because we encourage people to establish best management practices that our universities and colleges put forward, particularly the University of Minnesota. That's who we work with to establish them, to put those forward, that they are the good practices to establish on the land. And you've traveled the state. I've traveled the state. I see good practices, and I see terrible practices. If we can ensure, help influence that on a voluntary, from a voluntary perspective, I think we all end up with a much better state.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Gruenhagen.
Yeah, I'll just one additional caution. You know, as far as the land, the now the government's paying farmers to put the land back into swamps again. So, you know, the thing about voluntary and government, you know, what happens with voluntary is all of a sudden there's some subsidies or tax money available, and then more and more people sign up into something like that in order to get those, and then all of a sudden the voluntary turns into mandatory, and we have the government further and further involved in, with farming and micromanage it, and you know, based on their Medicaid welfare program and a number of other programs they do, they don't have a real good track record of producing excellent results. So I just would express that caution in that area. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gruenhagen. And Commissioner, to this program in particular, you've been working with the commodity groups and others, right?
We have.
Yes.
And we don't have 100%, Mr. Chairman, buy-in from across all commodity groups, but I continue to be hopeful, and I continue to talk with them about the merits of the program, and I think at the end of the day, they're recognizing that, you know, this is working across Minnesota.
Thank you, Commissioner. Chair Anderson.
Just a comment on some of that. A lot of the things you're talking about, Representative, deal with federal programs, and I think going back to what our State Department does, outstanding job in the area of food safety, protection, some of our pesticide issues. That, to me, is your core purpose and work. You do a great job on that. And, you know, if you can talk about federal farm programs, boy, just last year, farm groups were clamoring, get that farm bill done. There is a value to some of the things that's done that are done in Washington. Right now, I think subsidies are gone. Direct payments are gone. The federal crop insurance program is extremely important because farming is a highly capital-intensive business and the risks are great. So, you know, we can have our opinions, but again, getting back to what you folks do, it's a safety issue, food safety issue, and a lot of the regulations on the state side, and you do a very good job. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you for your comments, Chair Anderson. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, Mr. Ernst. I'd like to return back to the subject of funding on the both wolf and elk damage. As soon as it's practical, I would certainly like to see a breakout of how many claims we have in arrears, the amounts, the type of issue, not just for wolf but elk, because that affects another group of folks in the northern part of the state. And we also, you know, one year the elk damage wipes it out and the ranchers are scratching their head, and the next year it turns around the other way and the wheat farmers are having problems. And I would hope that as they look at the, you know, building the budget for that the governor will be introducing, that we take a look. It's particularly important that we go back and look until we were so rudely interrupted on December 19th by Judge Howell's decision to put the wolves back under federal protection. We're just about to the point where if we look at that historical data, we can start to see from a funding standpoint whether just how effective our private trappers and the ability to protect your livestock has on that whole funding situation for wolf damage. So I think that's an important thing that we on the Finance Committee in particular have the opportunity to look at and analyze, because the one thing I'm fairly confident is we probably don't have the right numbers right now, obviously, if we're in arrears on payments. But we need to take a look at past history and see. There was an expectation that we would spend a lot less money on wolf damage as soon as every farmer was able to spend every hour of the day out there with a shotgun protecting his cattle, and we found that that clearly doesn't work. We've got other things to do. So I'm ready to really go to work on that. I've got some background, as you know, on that going back a number of decades. So I would really appreciate that.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, thank you. And next week, I'm informed that from Mr. Cruz that you'll have a full accounting of how much money we have, how much money we've spent, how many claims are outstanding at this point in time. There is an opportunity for those folks that put claims forward to go to the federal program. There's money available there to assist them through that, but we'll be addressing that in a hearing next week.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks for your comments.
We have Representative Bly, Hansen, Anderson M., and Dill. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chairman. I was fortunate enough to attend the news conference and was really impressed with the two farmers from the Whitewater watershed that spoke about this, one a conventional farmer, one an organic farmer. And they really are exemplary models for soil and water conservation, and it was really good to see their involvement and to hear their stories and what they had to say. And I think that helps other farmers feel comfortable about getting into it, and also the reasons for doing so. As we look at the history of land use over man's history, different cultures and societies have fallen because they didn't take care of the soil and water. And not to say that farmers aren't doing a good job, but at the same time, sometimes in the aggregate, they miss the total effect of what happens with land use, even though they may be improving or doing a fairly good job. And it's just, I think it's helpful to put out there what standards are and what's possible to really do a good job of soil and water conservation. So really, thank you for the effort.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bly, thank you, and thank you for taking the time to participate, both you and Representative Hansen. Appreciate it.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of following up on that, one of the farmers said yesterday was this program gave him a marketing advantage. And I was thinking about what was said earlier, about government being involved in agriculture. We've had milk inspectors going out on the farm inspecting for years to make sure that milk is safe. And that's an assurance that's given to consumers in all of our districts. What they're buying is high quality and good. And that's kind of where one of the farmers said is their customers, their direct customers are asking, for some type of validation. Is are your practices good? Is this product, are you doing the right things? Do you care? And to hear that family speak yesterday and say, not only doing it for the good reasons of overall, but it's a marketing advantage. It's something that they can sell as they're out there. And I think as we look in the next 10 years, the discussion when this is at the end of the first 10 years is not going to be about what regulations were avoided. It's going to be about what advantage was done for those leaders that took their chance to get involved in this and to validate that their practices are good so that the consumers are going to buy them. So it kind of is exciting. I look forward to hearing more about it.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. We have Representative Anderson M.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Commissioner Frederickson, for coming in today. It's really good to see you face-to-face after all the time that your office and my business put together this last fall in opening up our brewery. Thank you for that. Also, your story. When the day you decide to retire, I think Scott Hansen over at the Comedy Gallery would love to have you in his lineup because you have a great story. True or not, it doesn't matter.
It's true. And if you don't believe me, just ask your dad. He'll tell you.
Absolutely. I was going to.
All right. Yeah.
Yes, my father served in the Senate at the same time as the commissioner. During all of this work that the commissioner and I are just talking about here, my wife and I, and open up the brewery, we discovered that there's a few things within the Department of Agriculture that seem to be kind of over-regulated, shall we say? Maybe that's probably the wrong word, but the brewery that my wife and I...
Representative, you're never wrong about how you feel.
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm losing control.
Yeah. My wife and I have a brewery with a tap room. And what a lot of people don't know is that there's a difference between a tap room and a brew pub. A brew pub is basically a restaurant. And the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has classified tap rooms as a brew pub, which is not really a good thing to do for means testing for the product. But through all this, we got the mission done. I thank you for that. But what I would like to do in working with your office for the next couple of years, if it takes that long, is to come up with some sort of a guidance document, something for maybe even a checklist for people that are interested in opening up tap rooms, because they are opening up all over the state. And nobody should have to go through with what my wife and I did. Not just with your office, but this is kind of just a regulatory thing. I'm not putting pressure on your office right now, and that was not my intent. My focus is just to say that there's work that can be done to make this process very, very simple. So that and just in doing that, if I can be of service to your office in helping to establish these guidelines for others in the future, this would be an awesome opportunity to work together, and I look forward to that.
Mr. Cruz.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you, Representative Anderson. We had a conversation a little bit on this yesterday. And I did talk after a conversation yesterday with our Deer and Food Inspection Division about the lack of user-friendliness of the food code. It is a very complex food code. They are experts in applying it. It is not their discretion, so to speak, about how these different things are classified. However, one of the suggestions that Representative Anderson's wife gave us that we are currently working on is a user-friendly checklist for all these businesses that are opening in the taproom area, which we would like to see more of, and we would like to support them, work with them. So we are working to come up with a checklist online document for people looking to get into the same business so that they can have maybe not a more user-friendly food code, but a more user-friendly steps towards getting them.
Representative Anderson, follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cruz, I also want to thank you for the input that you had in this whole ordeal. And to the members on the committee here, just so that you do want to know, my wife and I did find out that beer is classified as food. Now, every college student in America would love to know that classification. The other thing is that if I'd like to ask, and I don't know if this is in jest or if this is a serious thing, but if beer is classified as food, can I take EBT cards for that at the brewery?
No. Mr. Cruz.
Mr. Chair, no comment.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner.
Representative Anderson, surely you jest.
Yeah, that's correct. So, Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Hamlin. Commissioner, I don't think you were an intervener in the suit on the wolf issue, but are you going to be taking a position from the Department of Agriculture regarding the potential appeal that the Fish and Wildlife Service might undertake on the ruling by the judge?
Speak.
Sure. Mr. Cruz?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, that is correct. We are not an intervener, and really no, the DNR isn't either, and that's because we were not granted status by the court to intervene. There was amicus briefs from the DNR, not from the Department of Agriculture, because the DNR is the lead on the wolf hunt specifically. If you followed the ruling out in Idaho, which was similar to our situation here, it was delisted for largely the same reasons, although I share Representative Lueck's surprise in the ruling that they would injunct us from having a season until it reaches its final appeal. So that was certainly unexpected throughout Minnesota and throughout the Great Lakes states. So to answer your question, no, we're not interveners. We have been called on to encourage and to call on the Secretary of the Interior, who would be in a position to do that, and we will have to look to the Governor's Office for direction on that particular point.
Representative Dill.
Well, thank you. So there's really, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I see two issues. Of course, you know that Rip and Fabian and I were the author of the Hunt Bill that did eventually become law. But there's really an issue about that ag deals with in terms of the depredation and the DNR in terms of depredation and hunting. And so that's the reason I was interested in it, where you were going to fall out on this in defense of the ag industry.
We did.
Particularly the livestock industry, crops to some degree, but particularly the livestock industry.
Mr. Cruz.
Mr. Chair and members, certainly there are many groups, not just the Department of Agriculture, but also the Cattlemen's Association, anybody in the livestock industry. I think I heard it put yesterday that the people who work with Four Hooves are the ones who are dealing with this issue most closely. And my family, and I was speaking with Representative Fabian about this at the FFA meeting the other night. My family, half of it comes from Kitson County, where this is a huge, huge issue. And so there are many people who would seek standing with the federal court to say that this affects me, but you'd be surprised how hard it is to become a party to something that's already left the barn, so to speak. And so to seek to become a party at this point I think maybe it may be a good thing to do to show support for the agricultural industry, which we certainly do at the Department of Ag, and you're absolutely right about that. But as a legal technique to try and on appeal or on the potential appeal while the window is open, to try to become a party as what they call an interpleader, an affected party, those have a very low success rate in my understanding.
Representative Dill.
Just one last thing. I just encourage you to do what is available. I mean, it's really, the hunt is controversial, but state management of the wolf I don't view as controversial. Because, I mean, it's important that we keep the, I mean, local is best. And, you know, in this instance, it would be the state management, and there's this hurdle to get back to state management. And then if a hunt is contemplated in the future, that's a whole other issue. Mm-hmm. So thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dill. I believe that's all the questions for you, Commissioner. And so thank you. I believe we have the Department of Animal Health now. Is that correct?
That's correct. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much, Chairman Anderson, Chairman Hamilton, and members of the Joint Committee.
Commissioner, it's always a pleasure. Likewise. Good to see you.
Thank you. Well, Chair Hamilton, if I may, I'm going to give up my chair to Dr. Beth Thompson and to Chris Petrini, the CFO of the Board of Animal Health. And I will say that Dr. Beth Thompson has more letters behind her name. It's kind of intimidating. She's a lawyer like me, but also a doctor in veterinary medicine as well. So it's time for me to get out of her way and let her present to you what the good work that the board does.
Very good. Thank you. So please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Beth Thompson. I'm an assistant director with the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. A couple of opening comments. Our state veterinarian, Dr. Bill Hartman, also executive director of the board, sends his regrets. He's not able to be here today. He will be available, though, during the legislative session if any testimony is needed. I made this request, I think, some years ago. It's a very hard act to follow with Commissioner Fredrickson. And just to give you a little background about myself, I also grew up on a hog farm. The one thing that I have over Commissioner Fredrickson, though, is that I was the 1981 South Dakota State Pork Queen.
Yeah. So, well, Dr. Thompson, you have a lot more than that over him. I'll tell you that right now. And he's not that funny either. So, Dr. Thompson, I digress.
So, both Dr. Petrini and I are here today to give you an overview of the Minnesota Board of Animal Health, and I'll start out talking about who we are and what we do. Chapter 35 tells us what we do, and the chapter states that our mission, the Board of Animal Health, is to protect the health of the domestic animals in the state. And we are also part of the team that protects the public health. Those diseases that are zoonotic, such as rabies and influenza, we are part of the team that deals with those diseases. Our board itself is made up of 5 members. There are 2 practicing veterinarians and also 3 people, public members, that come from the large livestock groups within the state of Minnesota. That would be cattle, poultry, and hogs. We work very closely with our board because they really give us a good perspective on practicing veterinarian and also those people that work out in the livestock industries. We have field staff located throughout the state. Of course, we share the Freeman Building with the Department of Health and Department of Agriculture, but our field staff are really our boots on the ground. And the field staff work cooperatively out throughout Minnesota with USDA veterinarians and non-veterinarians. So we also affiliate ourselves with 2 laboratories, in-state laboratories, importantly, the University of Minnesota Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory that's located on the St. Paul campus. That laboratory is the official laboratory for the Board of Animal Health. And then the second laboratory is the Minnesota Poultry Testing Laboratory, which is located in Wilmer. That's a cooperative effort between the Board of Animal Health and the University of Minnesota. And it's located in Wilmer because that's really the heart of poultry production in Minnesota. And I have to tell you, too, that, of course, Minnesota is number one in turkey production in the United States. So that's a little bit about who we are. And what we do starts out with teaching. You know, whether our staff are answering phone calls in our office in St. Paul or they're out on the left-hand side of the screen, we've got some staff that are teaching how to take samples for chronic wasting disease testing. And then on the right-hand side of the screen, it's a poultry agent testing course that our staff is involved with. We're teaching veterinarians and producers every day. And teaching, too, is a component of preparing to respond to animal disease introductions. We are a key partner in the team that develops plans for responding to disease outbreaks. And responding not only includes the initial recognition and detection of a disease, but also planning going forward and how we can help our livestock industries deal with the possibility of a disease. And some of these plans include the secure egg supply, the secure milk supply, and coming soon, the secure pork supply. When there is an introduction of a foreign or emerging disease, the board is prepared to investigate and provide an appropriate response. And a good example of this was in a couple of years ago when porcine epidemic diarrhea virus was first found in the United States. I have to mention that Minnesota is number two in pork production. This was a very significant disease, and what the board did was work together with the Minnesota pork producers to provide an appropriate response to the introduction of this disease. Many of our programs have a component of inspection, and as you might, I do need glasses, so. Starting on the upper left-hand side, we've got one of our district veterinarians inspecting a garbage feeder. Moving around clockwise, we've got another inspector in a kennel. Down on the bottom, looking at some ducklings that had just been delivered to one of our dealers, and then a farm survey inspection. Important, too, are our import standards. And whether we've got a slaughter cow coming into the state to go to a market, or we've got a bred ewe that's coming into the state for coming into a producer's farm, or maybe a prize barrow that's coming in for the National Barrow Show. We have import standards so that we can track the health of the animals that are coming into the state. And importantly, that includes official identification, record keeping, parts of traceability. And we also track movement within the state. We call them concentration points, and I'm not sure if there's a representative here in this left-hand picture. That picture was taken a few years ago at the Winger sales barn, which is located in northwestern Minnesota. They were having a large slaughter cow sale there. But we have inspectors that are out in the field at the markets. They go to buying stations, and they also visit all of the fairs that are happening across the state coming up here in a few months. And the key component or the thread that I've talked about all the way through here is that relationship building. It's very important for the board, and we have good relationships with producers, veterinarians, livestock producer groups, and other agencies. We take great pride in serving the livestock industries in the state. An example of that strong foundation was the board's work in northwestern Minnesota a few years back. In 2005, there was a detection of TB in a slaughter cow that came from a herd up in that area. And within the next few years, even though we lost our TB-free status, we were able to regain it back by 2011. We moved forward quickly and efficiently because we had built relationships. And the outcome, of course, is that we want a disease-free status for all of our livestock industries located in Minnesota, both so they can trade within the nation and internationally. Last session, we saw the passage of the Commercial Dog and Cat Breeder Inspection Program. Since that time, we've formed an advisory committee, which has helped us with our veterinary protocol and other aspects of the law. We have been searching for and visiting some of these facilities, and beginning in July of this year, we'll begin to license some of those facilities. I do have to mention that one of our assistant directors, Dr. Paul Anderson, is currently in another state this week with some of our staff, another state that has had one of these programs in place for a period of time, and they're going to be bringing some more ideas back to us. And on the left-hand side of the screen up there, we've got the poster that we've been distributing to small animal clinics and other places so that commercial breeders can see what they need to be doing. And then on the right-hand side of the screen up there is the logo that will be for the Breeder of Excellence program that was part of that law. And lastly, before I turn it over to Dr. Petrini, this is kind of a catch-all slide. I've talked about some of the things that are up here as far as our responsibilities, but we also have some of the other services that we provide, such as dead animal disposal, and then, of course, some of the other species and diseases that we deal with. And with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Petrini.
All right, thank you. Dr. Petrini, please introduce yourself, state your name for the record, and begin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Chris Petrini. I also am an assistant director with the board. In addition to my duties as a veterinarian, I also wear the cap of the chief financial officer of the board. I think that we have a fairly small operation. We have about 38 employees, and so I prepared just one slide to give you an overview of our budget. On the left-hand side of this slide, you will see the uses of the funds that we get, and on the right-hand side, you'll see the sources of those funds. And I've chosen today to just highlight last fiscal year 2014. So these are not biennial numbers. So in order to carry out our mission, we spent in FY14 about $5.3 million. And really, about three-quarters of that goes to support the 38 people that work for us and do the work that Dr. Thompson described earlier. 63% of it is directly for salaries and fringe benefits. Another 5% for in-state travel, and that's primarily for our field trucks, for people that work in the field, our boots on the ground. Another 5% is for building lease, primarily the office space that we have over at the Freeman Building that we share with agriculture. And then I might note that even within our centralized IT services that makes up about 8% of our expenditures, that helps support about four people, and those four people used to work directly for us, and now those salaries are supported through the centralized minute services group. The other thing to mention, I suspect, is the professional technical services, which makes up about 12% of our budget. We spent in FY14 about $660,000, and this is primarily for testing livestock for diseases of concern, things like avian influenza or chronic wasting disease. And that is kind of an overview of the expenditures that we have. Where do we get our money? Well, primarily it's through general fund appropriations. Very little do we get really from revenue from fees. We do, however, get some funding every year from the federal government. Last year, we got about $615,000, and those monies come from cooperative agreements that we get, and we do these programs with the United States Department of Agriculture Veterinary Services. And those monies go towards helping us with our disease control programs and our disease traceability initiatives within the state. And that's a very quick overview of our budget. And if you have any questions, I think Dr. Thompson and I are happy to try to address those.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Petrini. I do have a question, and maybe this goes to Dr. Thompson. First of all, thank you for all that you do. I'd read an article where pork producers were talking about how the biggest threat to agriculture is emerging diseases. And so thank you once again for everything that you do. You brought up the veterinarian diagnostic lab. Can you share us your thoughts? Is it up to date? Is it adequate? Does it need help? That's a softball. I think I know what the answer is, but if you could comment on that, please.
Chair, members of the committee, yes, thank you for the softball. The veterinary diagnostic lab, while it is top-notch and does not only diagnostics but research that goes on over at the lab, all of that is so important for our livestock industries. But just like anything else, technology changes. And I think, Dr. Collins or somebody from the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab could better outline what they would be looking for, but it's always important to make sure that that lab has adequate funding.
Thank you so much. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is the emergency response team that deals with plant and animals, do you handle the animal part of that, or is that all in ag?
Dr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it depends on which plan we're talking about. As I mentioned, either the Secure Ag Supply, you know, some of those plans we deal directly with. We also work very closely with the Minnesota Department of Ag on those plans.
Representative Dill?
No.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On kind of on that same line of inquiry, a number of years ago, I participated. I was working at the county level in emergency management, and we did a tabletop exercise, I believe it was in Albert Lea, to deal with foot and mouth. That's, you know, just one of several of those diseases that, unlike our struggle with tuberculosis, that one moves at a slightly different velocity. And don't be facetious here, but it works just like lightning. I would be very interested in if we anticipate in the future any more of those type of at least table talk exercises. Cause what struck me from, and this is from the county level, something like that literally involves every agency in the state of Minnesota instantly, including the National Guard. It's not one like tuberculosis where, you know, thank goodness that disease is fairly slow and spreading. So I'd just like to find out if there's any future plans on that, and I would urge that it at least be considered, because it's, if God forbid, it would be a really rude awakening.
Who would like to address that? Dr. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, Representative, in answer to your question, yes, we do work together. The National Pork Producers, Patrick Webb, is known for his tabletop exercise, and some of those exercises just took place this last summer. Working down on the county level, it has been a couple of years since we've done some of those exercises, but certainly as we form our cooperative agreements, I think that would be a good idea to have those in there.
Thank you. So we're going to wrap this up in 11 minutes. Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Dr. Thompson, you mentioned you worked in the area of rabies, and I've kind of taken an interest in that. My dog got tangled up with a skunk a couple years back. The skunk was positive for rabies, and he was quarantined and things. Could you talk about the disease in terms of, is it increasing or stabilized in terms of the number of cases that are coming to you, and talk about the vaccination program for animals, please?
Dr. Petrini?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative, I used to be in charge of the rabies program, and as far as whether it's on the increase or not, no, it's really kind of an endemic disease, and that means that it's always present at a low level in the wildlife population, and that's primarily in bats and skunks. We do see from year to year an ebb and flow of disease in those species, and when there's a high level of disease in the wild population, it will spill over into some of our domestic animals, be it dogs, cats, or even cattle. So over the course of time, we do, along with the Department of Health, track disease, and we don't see that there's an increase, but we do see blips where it goes up and down over time. And what was the second part of your question, sir?
Chair Anderson.
What has to do with the vaccination? I took my dog in now for a booster, and there was talk about either a one-year period or a three-year period for that, those shots. What do you recommend for that?
Dr.
Yes,
Petrini.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, regarding vaccination of dogs and rabies, the rabies licensure is through the United States Department of Agriculture, and there are a variety of different vaccines that are licensed for use. Some of them are one-year vaccines, and some of them are three-year vaccines. And it just depends upon what the veterinarian in that situation is recommending for your dog. I think the majority of people do get a three-year vaccine. The first year an animal is vaccinated, the vaccine, no matter which type is used, is only good for 1 year. Then after that, some of those three-year vaccines would then be effective for those 3 years. Does that answer your question?
Chair Anderson. All right. Thank you. Any other questions?
Any other questions? You brought it up there about the pet breeders piece, and I know working with Representative Lesh, he did a great job bringing in all stakeholders, I believe, to work out, because there's a lot of concerns. Do you feel that most of them were addressed, and is this being rolled out where people are, you know, accepting this, if you will?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Yes, I think it has been a good rollout of the program, and especially with the formation of that advisory committee. Like I mentioned, we tried to get all players involved on that, and certainly we're trying to be transparent with everything that we do. We always pick up the phone, we always answer the questions, and you can go to our website and gain information about what we're doing on that program.
Well, thank you so much for that. And I don't see any other questions. Once again, thank you for all that you do. I really appreciate it. So, and you're welcome back anytime, and tell Dr. Hartman that we missed him, and he's welcome as well. All right? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, all right. Do we have any announcements? Any announcements? Anything? Nope. Seeing none. Chair Anderson? Anything else? Joint meeting again on Tuesday. With that, we are adjourned. Thank